This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this week's after show. We have had a pretty busy last few weeks, and you know what? It seems like the bloody coronavirus still kicking around, still disrupting the gym industry. That was actually a good episode you and I both listened to it with I can't remember the guy's name, president of the UFC gyms, and he was on Mind Pump, and they were talking about the future of the fitness industry. Obviously, things are very different in America as they are in Sydney right now. But also last night, someone that we both know also got us to watch, which is Four Corners. What is Four Corners? It's just like journalism. Like, how would you describe the type of show it is?
Yeah, I would say
investigative journalism.
Yeah, it's like it is, but it's also like probably the most unbiased we have in Australia.
That was biased.
Yeah, I didn't watch this program.
Oh, okay.
But it's on ABC, right?
Yeah.
ABC in general is like unbiased. Less biased. If you're in America right now, it's like not. Yeah, it's not like a private network like CNN or Fox News.
Yeah. So
you'd hope it's unbiased.
Yeah, I mean, it was just. I guess it was biased in the sense that I. I'll give some context. Essentially, the show, the hour episode, was specifically on areas of Australia that have been affected by the virus, by the shut, the lockdowns and the new regulations.
More the economy or people dying?
The economy. The economy. Not from a medical reason, more like, okay, what's going to happen to the economy afterwards? So they had on a large variety of different spots. They had like tourist towns, and obviously the tourist towns are the most hard hit. They're like destroyed. They went to some farming towns, so they talked about farming. And what I didn't realize, but one of the issues with farming is obviously picking the fruit or the crop, whatever it is, the timing's really important. Obviously, like when it ripens.
Yeah.
But you need a tremendous amount of labor. And so much of the labor that we have in Australian farms comes from international
travelers. Yeah, because we force them to work to renew their visa.
Yeah, and it's like 80% of the people that work on the farms.
No one wants that
job, right? Yeah. So what's going to happen is like all these harvests are going to, like the timing's going to be off. They're not going to have the manpower to pick them. So there might be like, didn't say food shortages, but what I gathered was increases in the cost of food. Obviously, like really, so the most easterly point of Australia is Byron Bay for you international listeners. It's a great holiday destination, but that has suffered tremendously. And there was this one guy who had jet boats, and they would do whale watching. But because of social distancing, not only is he's 90% tourism, but not only is that down, but the boats can only hold 30% of what they could before because of the social distancing rules. So it's just getting a bit crazy out there. Like it's getting a bit tough. Obviously, I was waiting for the part where they talk about Sydney. They did talk about Sydney. They talked about real estate prices and that sort of thing and events. And yeah, some companies have lost, I don't know. You kind of feel in some ways. So I felt like the fitness industry got hit pretty hard because gyms had to shut down. And yeah, look, I mean, depending on where you are in the world listening to this, it is different for everyone. Everyone is, it's so inconsistent. Right now in Sydney, it's going really well. Like the gyms have reopened and they're busy. There's some regulations. Obviously, heaps of people are not obeying the regulations, but whatever. It's still the consumer's choice to go there or not. And you look at somewhere like Melbourne, obviously super harsh, all shut down, gyms can't open. Places like America, it's a bit of a miss, hit and miss. It's just depending on what state you're in and what type of gym you have. They're not kind of lumping all gyms into one category. But what was just so, I guess, hard to watch is that at least we're on the comeback. At least our revenue is growing again. Some people, like they're mainly the event space, you don't realize how much goes into an event. Like this woman that they interviewed, she is in Australia, the biggest convention center we have is the ICC. It's in Darling Harbour. It's an amazing convention center. They have the Fitness Expo there every year. And there's this woman, her business is to design the sets.
Yep.
So her team builds the set. So if you want like a cool stand, she'll like build the cool stand for you. And she does that in the ICC for all the different events throughout the year. And they do like 3 events a week, nonstop throughout the year. That's what they average. She has lost, I think they said she was turning over like $1 million a month and she's gone to zero. She bankrupted the company because like zero events. So just when you think it's bad, someone out there has got it worse. And this one guy, he had a similar company where he would actually supply coffee catering to the event. So he has like tons of espresso machines. He would employ somewhere between like 50 to 60 people a day, he was saying. He does 2 to 3 events a day. And he would employ 50 to 60 people a day. He's got a core team of employees, but mainly contractors. And he's only using one machine out of like 100 machines. And that machine is in like the ABC building. Mm. And he's gone from, I think it was like $400,000 turnover a month to $40,000 turnover a year. That's the rate that he's on at the moment. So it's pretty tragic. The only thing that are keeping these businesses alive is JobKeeper. And for those of you international people who don't know what JobKeeper is, it's just our government financial support program, essentially. And they're winding it up like slowly. And then I guess the show was making a case for how bad it's really going to be at the end of it. It was a lot of doom and gloom. There was essentially not a single positive thing that came out of that show. But at the same time, they focused specifically on the industries and the businesses that were most hard hit. So they didn't go over to like, I don't know, gyms on the comeback, and they interview a gym owner and he's like, yeah, we've recovered and like we're going better. They didn't do any of that.
They also didn't go, I didn't watch it, but they also didn't go to, you know, people are not spending money at these events. They're spending it somewhere else. I'm not saying all the same amount of money is being spent, but people, you know, are not going on holidays to Bali and they're going to spend that money somewhere else. People still want to spend their money. Yeah. You know, this might be in a different area.
That's what they're hopeful of. They're hopeful that the money not being spent, I don't want to make this too long, this part, but yeah, they're hoping that the money that's the $45 billion of tourism that comes into Australia, that's not going to come into Australia. There's also $65 billion in international travel that goes out of Australia. That'll stay in. So domestic travel will hopefully keep the economy alive. So we'll see. Look, I think now is a great time, obviously, to invest in gyms, invest in more fitness stuff. I think because we're part of a networking group, we spend a bit of time with people that are outside the fitness industry, and it's been interesting listening to their stories through lockdown. How fitness obviously became, and health became, a huge focal point for everyone, right? And outside of, you know, we're in the fitness industry, so I don't count us, right? So it's what we do for work. But for people that, you know, it's got nothing to do with their day-to-day lives, it really went one way or the other. Very, very, did not really hit a middle ground. It either went, this is the moment I take my health seriously. Like, I'm counting my macros. I am doing exercise every day. I'm losing weight. I'm stopping drinking. It was that extreme. And the other story is like, I stopped training. I put on weight. I drank alcohol. There was nothing in between. No one was like, yeah, I just started like kind of kept up my routine, did this and that. That's sort of the fitness industry story. But everyone outside of it was one extreme to the other. It was mostly bad. But then some people, they just completely redid their fitness. I even spoke to one guy who works in the financial sector. And he was saying, you know, I was really into the gym. I was really into fitness. But I realized that I was so one-dimensional in my training. And he goes, I had so many rigid beliefs. Like, I didn't really want to eat vegetables. I just drank protein shakes. All I did was pump dumbbells. He's like, give me a fucking dumbbell. And then he's like, you know, I'm not actually... Because, you know, he didn't have dumbbells. He didn't have machines. He's like, I'm actually not that capable. So he bought like a mace, you know, like a steel mace.
Yeah.
And then he bought like resistance bands, and he started doing all this really strange breath work and training and eating more vegetables and doing all this research on different, you know, superfoods and all this stuff. And maybe all the information he got was pretty garbage, but he took it to another extreme, which was like, okay, I've only been focused in this one narrow corner of fitness. I don't have any skills to take care of my body when the gym's closed. What else can I experiment with? And he said, it's the best his body's ever felt. It's like getting more sun. Obviously because he's working from home, he's got a better life balance, he's doing some different training, he's eating different foods, and he's like, I can't tell you. He's like, I don't really look as jacked as I used to, but I feel so much better. His body feels so much better. So I thought that was a super cool experience for those people.
Yeah, and one other point they had in the podcast you originally mentioned on the Mind Pump one, was we talked about this earlier, which was like we had a study in Australia, which was like there was like 6 million check-ins into gyms after the lockdown, and there wasn't a single transmission. What was crazy was they had one now that's in the States. And obviously, the States has way more COVID than us. And, you know, you could look at us and be like, well, there's just not much COVID. That's why there wasn't many people. This one they looked at, there was nearly 50 million health club visits.
Wow.
It's a lot of visits. 0.0023% tested positive, which is less than 500 times lower than the rest of the country.
Okay, so what does that mean?
So you would expect, if you just like, if a gym was just like everywhere else, right? A gym was like a cafe or a restaurant or a park, you would expect 500 times more cases in the gym than there were.
And 500 times more or 500 times less?
More COVID cases than there actually was in gyms during this since COVID has hit in America.
Okay, so you have a 500 times less chance of catching it in a gym.
In a gym than just like on average elsewhere in society. So if they were like, oh, I reckon if there's been 50 million check-ins, we're going to see this many COVID cases.
Yep.
It's 500 times less than that. Wow. They don't know exactly why. But the point is that gyms have turned out to be far, far not as bad for spreading COVID as everyone thought.
Mm.
And, you know, there's like cafes and restaurants open, and it seems like you're much more likely on average to catch it there than in a gym. And they were raising a few different possibilities. One, well, the big one is just like healthier people are at gyms.
Yes.
And healthy people, just like are more robust, don't tend to get COVID. Obviously, like just example of one, but you know, your partner got COVID in shape, wasn't very bad for her.
Yeah.
And also the other one they mentioned, which was just when you tend to feel a bit sick, the first thing you don't go to is the gym. So it like naturally selects for people not going. Whereas you're like, oh, I'll definitely still go to work. Or like, I'll definitely get a coffee because I'm tired and I'm not feeling very good. But the first thing you do is like, yeah, I don't go to the gym when I'm like sniffling and got a cough and stuff like that. Everyone knows that, right?
So
it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And then potentially one of the last ones as well is just gyms are like the easiest place of anywhere to track people going.
Yeah.
You know, they do temperature checks. You have to sign in. It's like nothing. Like we were doing sign-ins before sign-ins were cool with COVID.
Yeah.
It's just standard signing in.
Yeah.
So there's like a really good case in a potentially when they look back on this, like gyms should have been the thing that always stayed open instead of being the first thing to close.
Yeah. So I put a, I put a very stern rant on my Instagram. If you guys don't follow me, definitely go check it out. So if you go to my Miles Project page, Raph and I are both on there in the bio, but I put on a rant about pre-made meals and, you know, a lot of people listen, a lot of people commented, a lot of people DM me as well. Some in disagreement, some in agreement, but I wanted to talk about it on the podcast as well. Essentially, pre-made meals is becoming really popular, right? This is, you know, in Australia, MyMuscleChef is one of the big ones people know. YouFoods is one of the other big ones. And then I'm not sure what they have in America or what they have in Europe, but there are tons of them. I see everyone posting about them, right? Pre-made meals have gotten to a point, man, when I first saw pre-made meals make it onto the scene, they were disgusting. Disgusting. It was like dried like beef sticks with boiled rice and like two pieces of broccoli. Like you had to be a very, very dedicated bodybuilder to eat that kind of food.
Yeah, it was bodybuilder's food.
It was awful. It was truly awful. It was disgusting. Now, it has reached a point where I can have Mexican for breakfast. I can have Mediterranean for lunch and I can have Asian for dinner and it all tastes amazing. If you heated it up, poured it into a bowl, mixed it in and served it to someone, they would honestly think it's restaurant level food. That is how good it is. I can't even cook that well. And yet people buy these pre-made meals. So many of our clients, and look, if you're a client, you're listening to this and you fall into this category, I'm talking to you too. And then within 3 weeks, they've stopped eating the meals. And the number one reason they give us is, I got bored. This is a huge problem. You cannot get bored of food like this. You're not allowed to get bored of food like this. We have gotten sucked into the hedonic treadmill, which we've had for so long, which is you see something, you want something, you get it, you enjoy it, but then you adapt and you want the next thing, right? Now it's trickled over into our food. We have so much abundance of food, so many different restaurants and flavors and supplements and tastes and all this crazy stuff that we get bored of our food so easily. But eventually it has to end somewhere. The buck stops somewhere, right? You can't just keep... They're going to run out of delicious pre-made meals. There are only so many recipes they can cook up. So just the point I was trying to make is like, it actually should be boring. You actually kind of should get sick of it. Not all food, not every single meal you have every single day needs to be a new, exciting, delicious thing. Because then when you go to a restaurant to have the new, exciting, delicious food, it's, you know, if it's a 10 in excitement, it's like a 4 because you've been eating delicious variety food all day, every day. And you shouldn't be. A large part of your diet should just be the same foods over and over again. It'd be that consistency of just high quality nutrients, simple foods, minimally processed, whole foods. And you should just be eating that day in and day out, those same kind of 10, 15 foods. And yeah, you want to mix it up and have variety as well. But there's just a huge problem of people getting bored of delicious food. It's not going to get better. You're not going to find it better from another company. You should just accept that, hey, these have great macros. These are working towards my goals. I'm going to be really consistent if I keep eating them. And not every meal has to be awesome. Just change your mindset around that. And it's just not so bad. The food is delicious. You're not allowed to get bored of it. You just eat it. You know, just eat it and enjoy it. It's not disgusting. Like, if you had to eat what they had, what, 7, 8 years ago when we started fitness, fair enough. But nowadays, it's like, come on. Come on, guys. Like, what are we really doing here? You have so much choice. It's so delicious. You're not allowed to get bored. Just be consistent. Stay on track with your goals. Because the alternative is that you just fall off your diet and you stay out of shape and you order Uber Eats and it's never that good. But I really, really think just stick to a few meals, switch it up, you know, every couple of months, but just be consistent.
Yeah, I think this is weird. It's like a middle ground with these types of meals that I think when they go, like they try and be too tasty, then you get sick of it quicker. Because it's like...
overwhelming.
Yeah, because you're just not meant to eat this like... It's like if you got this like really fancy restaurant, like, wow, it tastes like that's a shock to the body that it tastes.
Yeah, like overly saucy.
And you have that, yeah, really salty. You have that every single day. You get over it really quick. There's a middle ground there, which I think is where most people land, right? Yeah. And if you just go like plain tuna, which I've done, like plain tuna and plain rice, and I've like a little bit of salt, that's nuts. Honestly, that can stain you for a while, but like it does really start to get boring at a certain point. I do think that is rough. Like everyone knows, obviously, the fish and the rice cakes famous YouTube video. But
I don't know the fish and the rice cakes.
Oh, dude, you got to Google. It's like a famous bodybuilding video, and it's this like bodybuilder, and they're like, "Oh, what do you eat for lunch?" He's like, "Oh, you know, fish and a rice cake." And they're like, "Oh, cool." And like, you know, what do you have for dinner? "Oh, you know, just a bit more fish and a rice cake." And they're like, "Okay, like breakfast?" He's like, "Oh, fish and a rice cake." This guy was only eating fish and rice cakes. It's like UK but bodybuilder.
That's
so anyway. There's a fish middle. And a rice there's cake. A, there's 100%. There's a middle ground around there. I think it's just like a mindset shift. Like, yeah, you just. I don't think you deserve like. Restaurant quality food every single meal of the day. And I don't think you train the best on that either. I really think like if you want to train frequently and well, your body does well on some pretty plain foods.
Yeah, I just don't think, yeah, you want to train your body to get bored of what should be just really good food, consistent food. Like, man, so much of food is outside of just taste as well, right? Like the problem with the hedonic treadmill is the only focus of food for so many people is how it tastes. But what about the nutrients? What about the satiety? What about the fuel for your workout? You know, what about the consistency towards your long-term goals? Those are other things that you need to take into consideration. Convenience, you know, another thing. So there's just so many other factors that, you know, you need to realize when you're eating this food, like, hey, yeah, I'm a little bit bored of this. It doesn't taste that good, but you know, it's got all these other things. It's got the nutrients I need. It's fueling me up for my training session. It's keeping me on track for my goals. It's convenient so I can focus on other things. Like there are just so many other areas it wins in. I just think like you just can't keep expecting it to get more delicious and like more variety. Anyway, I spent a lot of willpower yesterday trying not to discuss this with you, but now I want to discuss it with you on the podcast. So I'm glad I held on because I want to get your like just your first reaction thoughts. So I was watching this video of this guy, I can't remember his name, successful business owner, and he talked about downtime, and he talked about and you might not actually find yourself in this position anymore because now you're a dad. But I am thinking of putting in, or actually I am going to be putting in a regular solo trip, probably once a quarter. Now you and I have that getaway in sort of every quarter as well. We talk about the business, we get into a different environment. We find it really productive. Your brain totally flips a switch and it's on a different wavelength. But what do you think, like, how important do you think it is that people get away and try and have a solo trip, you know, maybe at most probably once a quarter? So I was thinking like 2 or 3 days, go out on Airbnb, phones off, computer off, everything off, and it's just like a notepad and a pen, and it's just like switch the brain into a different gear.
It's a good question.
Yeah. If you didn't have Ziggy, obviously Ziggy's like change
no,
the game.
I reckon there's two types of people. So there is, say you, the type of person that will naturally try and spend more time with other people if you've got time on your hands.
Yes.
And it sounds like that would be a good thing because what you're doing is you're doing a solo trip, but you're isolating yourself. So you're not really speaking that much to other people.
Yeah.
That's not really the
complete isolation.
Then I think there's the other type of person, which is me, which is if you have spare time, I'll try and like avoid spending with other people, right? And I think what you get more out of if you're that type of person is doing a solo trip, but where you have to like speak to other people and meet other people.
Right.
For me, what was very beneficial was like the first time I went overseas by myself.
Right.
Because, you know, you'd like go to the hostel, you'd go to wherever you're going to live, and like you have to speak to some people and meet some people. It's kind of before phones going crazy, but yeah, like even a phone, like, you can't spend all day on your phone messaging your old friends, right?
Yeah,
you like have to go
yeah.
out and do it. And I reckon that is a really good one. And it's like a weird social thing against it. Like, where are you going? Like, on a holiday. Who with? No one.
Yeah.
You can actually have a really good time. Whenever you met someone that was like, yeah, I was traveling by myself, you're like, fuck, that's amazing.
Yeah, they're on an adventure.
Yeah, that's the coolest. And you can do whatever you want and you meet new people. And it's like a real adventure. And you can kind of be whoever you want when you're on the trip. So I think if you're that type of person, super beneficial. But yeah, if you're the opposite, which is you, probably would sound more productive. Does sound a bit scary, but going away and just doing all your own thing.
Well, I always find that when there's a little... So I was watching this guy talk about, and he's like, you know, he's running these high growth companies for, you know, X amount of years, and I was exhausted. Like, I was worn out. And I don't feel that way, but, you know, that's not the point you want to get to realize you need to do these sorts of things. And he's like, yeah, then I started incorporating these solo trips. And, you know, the most important thing for me was, like, I just fought hard to keep them in my calendar because it was so easy to get rid of them. But I was listening to him talk on this video, and I realized there was some resistance to me doing this. And I thought, that is probably the exact sign that I needed of how important these things are. Because as soon as you feel that resistance to something, you know it's good for you. Same way, it's training, right? So you feel that resistance to train, you're like battling in your head, oh, I should take a day off, oh, my knee's a bit sore, like my whoop score's yellow, it's not green. You find all these little bits of excuses, and that's your resistance to doing something that you know is ultimately always good for you. We've done it enough times to know that we can just easily push past that resistance. But for this particular thing, because it's a new sort of thing for me, even though I did live by myself for a while, I thought that was beneficial. I do think having the isolated, you know, 2-3 days to just go away, turn everything off. I mean, you don't really ever get that at all. Like if you think about extended solo downtime, basically most people don't have it at all. Especially if you live in a big city, you really don't get it. Like it could be decades of before someone's actually had that. So you got kids, you got wife, you know, or husband, partner, whatever, or he's busy at work. Like you're always around people constantly. That's because we need people. It's important, but to actually have that time by yourself, it'd be interesting to see what pops up, because I think it would definitely be valuable. So anyway, I'm planning that, so I will obviously share the experience on the after show. I think I'm going to do it after I move into the new place, which is actually what I want to talk about. I'm very excited. October 13th, be moving to Bondi officially. You know what's so weird? Like, I think I always had this weird stigma against Bondi. I don't know why. I think it's because...
No, it's because you grew up in the north.
No, it's not.
It's ingrained from the second you're born.
No, we never talked about it. No, Bondi was not on my radar until I met you, right? And you lived in Bondi and I started coming out to Bondi. I think it was more... Now, honestly, I actually don't know what it was. I don't know why I had a stigma against it. Maybe it's just some subconscious stuff built up. But because the different areas of Sydney are so different, like suburb to suburb, it's almost like if you spent enough time here, every single person has slight subtle differences between... Obviously, between Newtown and Bondi, there's an extreme. And I guess in the same way, there'd be an extreme between people in New York and California. There is quite a big extreme... or subtle extremes as you start moving closer between the suburbs. Now, what I think that if you get enough exposure to different areas of Sydney, you start to be like, oh, these are my people, right? I think that's what anyone could say. You know, I guess when people move to New York and they've lived, I don't know, in the middle of nowhere in America, they move there and they go, oh, I'm here, I'm home, these are my people. Or they move to California and they go, oh, these are my people. I don't know, they move up north to Canada and they go, oh, these are my people. That is how I feel about Bondi. I don't know why. Maybe it's just how I've changed over time. You obviously grew up here, but you knew that. But I never felt like any sort of group culturally or values-wise I fit in with quite as well as Bondi. So I'm very excited to move here. And it made me think, I reckon there are so many people, because there's so much disruption right now, working from home and people losing jobs and, you know, property prices shifting and moving around, not just in Australia, but all over the world. I think now is the time to really evaluate, am I with my people? Because whether you're living in, you know, a shack or living in someone's garage or you're living in a mansion, being amongst your people is the most important part. Feeling like you're comfortable and you're with... There's nothing worse than living in, like, I don't know, an amazing house and then going out to, you know, be social at a restaurant or a bar or wherever and no one's like you. It's just like you're an alien. You just don't fit in with them. You don't have the same values. There's nothing that you want to talk to them about. You can't relate to them. So you just go back home and you sit by yourself in your nice home with your family. It just doesn't... For me, it just doesn't make sense. And so I think if you feel like you're not with your people, but you know where they are, you're like, man, in that suburb, like I'm with my people, but you know, it'd be a slight downgrade in my place or the quality of it or the size of it. I think it's worth it to be amongst your people. I truly, truly believe that. I don't think it's... Yeah, I don't think it's worth it to... you know, get more space and have a garage and do all this other stuff to be somewhere where you're not quite as happy.
Yo, Americans are definitely better at this than Australians. I think Americans totally. Are huge at like...
Yeah.
People have recommended, hey, you should go like live this place.
Yeah.
You know, you seem like that type of person.
Yeah. So many people don't live where they were born.
Yeah. And they're always on the move to go to the right place. And also, I think, I mean, they've definitely got more options than we do. At
52.
In terms of different cities and states and different like much different types of areas of the country. But yeah, I think no matter where you live, even if it's half an hour away, there can be pretty big differences,
huge,
right?
Huge, yeah. Oh, big time. The difference between Newtown and Bondi is dramatic, and it's 30 minutes difference.
Yeah, and it's just usually a bit of fear associated with it, right? Oh, I've got to find a new gym, find new friends, like maybe further away from family. But you're right, it is worth it.
Definitely worth it. And even recently, because we've had in our gym so many people move over, you know, there's been so much movement in and out of the eastern suburbs of Bondi and the beaches and stuff, and you just see people that, you know, have always wanted to live somewhere like this, and because the property prices dipped for a little bit, they moved in, they're just happier. They just enjoy life more. And so I think that's really important. I think it is important to be amongst the areas and the people and the cultures that are important to you. And I think for a lot of people, that's why a lot of people move to like Sydney and they love it here just in general, because people are fit here. People care about their health. People want to eat well. Imagine us, I don't know, living in the middle of America. There's no vegetables around. Like,
yeah, you'd be miserable.
Yeah, it'd be miserable. Everyone wants to drink beer. Like, we're miserable. We don't like alcohol.
Like, when we're in America traveling, we would just obviously just go straight into Whole Foods. And I feel like we just hid there to like just try and feel a bit more like we're at home.
I think so too. Because nowhere else we drove, we're like, we don't want to eat there. No. We definitely don't want to eat there.
All Whole Foods really needed was like Australian dollars, and I would have felt right at home.
Maybe some Aussies at the checkout counter. They like have to practice Australian as part. If you guys see an Aussie come here, I want you to try and speak your Australian accent to them. But yeah, 100%. 100%. And I think this whole thing goes from like country town to city people, and then from city to cities, suburbs within cities. There's all these different microcultures, and I think you really have to take the time to find your people, because you are undoubtedly happier. That's why people, New York, they live in tiny apartments. Mm. Tiny, tiny apartments. Hong Kong, tiny apartments. China, tiny apartments. I don't think it's really a choice much China, but people choose to live there because it's their people and they feel at home there, and it's worth it. Mm. I'm telling you, it's worth it.
And one of the last points here before we get into the listener questions, we talked about this on a Monday show. I think it was with Mike Jussera, the powerlifter. But this is an approach that I haven't really done in the past. And I just tried it. I was doing Project Strong. I had a small, not an injury, but I was just like, as the back squats were getting heavy, so like a little bit of low back pain, a little bit of knee pain, but only when it was heavy. Normally what I do in these scenarios, I like go away and like try and fix the problems and then come back to it.
And add more weight.
Yeah.
For sure, that shit.
But what I did this time, and we talked about it on the show, it took about 5 weeks, was I didn't change anything. I just took the weight back down and then built it back up over the 5 weeks. So it didn't hurt. It didn't hurt when I was lighter, right? So anything like over 160 kilos seemed to hurt a bit. Anything lighter, it was not hurting. So I took it like back down to 100.
Mm-hmm.
It was fine. And I just did nothing different.
Right.
Same technique. Didn't really like... actually did a little bit of soft tissue work with this new stuff we got. This new...
massage guns
and vibrating balls, which did seem to help a bit. But I really just like worked my way back up in the weight quite slowly. I mean, I just got like straight, I got back to the weight, back over, and this time just didn't hurt anymore. And I've like never really done it. I think I was concentrating more on my form, definitely probably the way back up. So obviously, intuitively, you got a little bit slower, like a little bit more careful, and maybe ingrain some better habits on the way down. But it's like an approach to injuries that an old coach like has recommended to me in the past. I've never really done it. Always just tried to go away and do other exercises.
But keep the same weight on the bar.
Yeah, and then just come back to and then come back to the same weight.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting one, which is just like, stick to the same exercise. And maybe it was no problem with it. Maybe I just ramped up too heavy the first time.
Mm.
And man, it worked really, really well. I just went slowly back up, got back up to the old weights, and there was no pain this time.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's most people try and stick to the weights because they don't want to see themselves go backwards and just add in rehab exercises.
Yeah, but sometimes those rehab exercises are so far removed from the exercise you're doing.
Yeah, I watched it. I mean, I watched some of the best CrossFit athletes, you know, in 2011 and 12 push massive weights and just do rehab exercises constantly.
Yeah.
And none of, they were doing, when someone does rehab exercises constantly throughout the year, it's not getting better. Sorry to break it to you, but the reason you're doing rehab exercise is to fix pain. If you're not fixing pain, then, you know, it's not working. So,
and there's just such a big gap between, you know, a heavy lift and like a double, triple pink mini band.
Yeah.
That's a gap.
Duck walk.
Yeah, and it's just, if you just like do the mini band and go straight back to the heavy exercise, like it's a gap that doesn't get closed.
Does not get closed. So, very fortunately, actually this kind of doubles up, but RecGen created a new shirt. I actually don't know. I think it's the... God, I'm going to get it wrong. I think it's the Oxy Plus. I think it's Oxy T Plus. But anyway, True Protein printed on it because they have a partnership. They printed on it. And I tell you what, it is extremely nice. It's a little bit more lightweight than the previous version of the Oxy T. Man, it breathes so well. And as it starts to get really hot now, as this thing starts to heat up, having the RecGen gear that can really keep you cool and, you know, you can sweat in it and it dries really quickly and it doesn't stink. Oh my God. This makes such a big difference. Like, quality garments, huge. I've been wearing a lot of cotton stuff for a while, just, I don't know, because it's been cold or whatever, but really when the temperature gets warm is really when the quality of your fabric makes a huge difference, because the sweat goes up, right? The heat goes up and, like, it can start to really stink if it's not quality stuff. So yeah, RecGen's popped out this new Oxy T Plus, and it's amazing. They've done such a good job. They have, I've got a preview, a behind the scenes preview of all the next stuff that's coming. I think it's coming out in, I want to say towards the end of this year, but you guys should be very excited for it. They also brought out Muscle Tanks as well. I know everyone listening to this, huge fan of the Muscle Tank. Raph, obviously, huge fan of the Muscle Tank. Wears it all the time. So they brought out their version of the Muscle Tank, which is dope. Amazing cut. Fits really well. Perfect for guys. Obviously, using some of their fabric technologies like the silver weave and the bio weave and all this other stuff. So RecGen is just an amazing company. Obviously, their women's stuff is out there. The feedback's been really good. I know a lot of the girls have been posting about the RecGen stuff. They love it. I do think it looks really good on girls as well. I'm a big fan of it. So definitely go check out the RecGen store if you haven't yet. And actually, I met a few people on the weekend that listened to the podcast, picked up RecGen gear because of our recommendation. Only had good things to say about it.
Man, I'm telling you, it is... Like, there's different stages in my life. One stage is when I found Lululemon. And the next stage has really been finding RecGen. Like, yeah. You know me. Pretty much my whole wardrobe now, nearly, is RecGen for training gear.
Yeah.
And it makes such a big difference. Like, if you haven't tried the t-shirt or the Muscle Tank, man, they probably do returns, right? Yeah. I would just get it. If it is not so much better than a cotton t-shirt, just send it back.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, it's nuts, the difference. As long as it's hot and you sweat, you will see the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. So go to recgen.com. That's RECGEN.com. The code is MMP, and that is going to get you 15% off your entire order. So recgen.com, MMP, those three letters, is going to get you 15% off at checkout.
Okay, so good listener questions. This one is close to home. Jarjel, it's got some Russian last name, I'm not going to say. Hey guys, do you have any thoughts on treating inner elbow pain? I've been nurturing an injury for a while now. It seems to come back every time I'm doing a lot of movements with gripping elements. Muscle ups, toaster bar, butterfly pull ups. Thanks for your insight. I've had this forever.
You've had it for more time.
This was my first actual injury I got in the gym, and I was like 16.
Mm.
And I couldn't...
Was it just your right side only?
No, man, it wasn't my right side. Like, that was just steel strong. It was actually the left side. And it was... Yeah, left elbow, inner elbow pain. It was actually more on pressing... It was actually on pressing movements. So it wasn't on pulling movements, and I couldn't get it better. I tried everything, and then eventually I got a tennis elbow strap.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't tennis elbow; it was the inside of the elbow, which is more golfer's elbow.
Yep.
And I got a strap that just compresses the forearm.
Yeah,
and it instantly took the pain away,
mm.
and it was done. And I just wore the strap for like the next 2 years of my training, and then one day I stopped wearing it, and it was fine. But that was an instant fix. So if you have this problem, I would recommend trying it. It's just like a strap you get from like a chemist shop. And what a doctor told me later was probably happening was that... So like there's two bones in your forearm, right?
Yeah.
When you're putting pressure through it, like a heavy bench press, sometimes because I started lifting very young, I think I was still growing, the bones can sort of push apart a little bit from the pressure. And just having that compression around the outsides of the bones apparently can like just get rid of that pulling on the tendon joint in the elbow. So that's one thing I would try. But then obviously the pain came back to more how you're describing it when I started doing CrossFit.
Okay.
From just like all the pulling exercises. Yeah, so like every exercise you just mentioned, like gripping pull-ups, muscle ups, every single one, I had elbow pain. Probably never got it perfect. I tried so many things. I don't know if you remember that like forearm, that massage machine thing we got.
Yeah, the clamp.
The clamp at the gym. I had the clamp. I tried like voodoo bands.
We tried a lot of shit.
Voodoo bands, rolling, obviously like heaps of money at physios and chiros and all that type of stuff. All works, all doesn't work. But I would say that like overall, my two cents on it is like, yeah, one, taking care of the soft tissue above and below the elbow does help. Like if you just have like really junky biceps and triceps and forearms, it's going to be a bit of stress there. But then number two, just getting your shoulders working correctly.
Mm.
you know, the elbow like doesn't do a lot, right? It's like at the will of your shoulders. If you can get like, as soon as I would get my shoulder blades working better, you know, the muscles in between the mid traps, lower traps, and just get like your shoulder position, your elbow position correct on exercises like burpees and pulls, not having your elbows flaring out too much for the sides, the pain would just like slowly go away. And it wasn't until I really fixed like those more significant problems that it got better.
I dealt with this as well. I think the worst pain I could get myself into was the rack position when it was like compressed.
Yeah, I felt it there as well.
Oh my God, it was so bad. But it was never, it was so painful, but it was never painful enough to ever stop me doing what I needed to do.
Yeah, similar.
But I also couldn't never really find the relief from one thing. I think what really just sent it away was like the last point you touched on was developing better shoulder strength. I had really weak shoulders coming into CrossFit, and I think they were just not stable and not strong enough, and the elbow was just taking a lot of the extra load. And then when I spent a bit more time doing some more 360 shoulder work, and what I mean by that is just not just, you know, a strict press, you know, not just a kettlebell press, but, you know, doing skin the cats, doing rear support holds, doing ring dip holds, doing, you know, S-waves and Blackburns, and doing all this kind of different shoulder stuff, even handstands, and but managing the volume as well, not going crazy with it and building it up slowly. I think that's when I really, the elbows, you know, really started to be able to manage the pain. I think the problem with CrossFit, a lot of people that do CrossFit and get inner elbow pain, or really just do, you know, some kind of functional fitness and get this elbow pain, is that, yeah, they just haven't spent the years building up the body slowly and with, you know, a well-balanced program. It's just jumping into it too quick, going too heavy, and then just some joints just get too inflamed.
Yeah, and often it's those smaller ones, smaller weak ones, elbows and wrists.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the first to go.
Yeah, it's not like I did anything particularly wrong. It was just like not ready. Yeah.
Okay, Grant Sedowith, aside from Project Strong, what are some of the most effective strength and powerlifting programs you have tried? For me, tried quite a few. Definitely when we had Amir Fazeli.
Yeah.
Who's been on the podcast a couple of times. He's a good friend and owns some powerlifting gym in Sydney. A lot of people do his program. I've done his program.
Adonis.
Got really, really good results on his program. And it was kind of like building up like 4 reps, 6 reps, 8 reps, 12 reps, then down to 2, 4, 6, 8. And I did like a 12-week cycle of his program. Really, really effective. I think what was different, I think it's a general theme for me, which was that I had quite a lot of reps in it. And powerlifting programs that seem to have like more reps in them really seem just to work well for me. Everyone's got to find that. The lower rep ones seem to work much worse for me, but there's heaps of doubles and triples. I seem to just go nowhere. Just like hit a wall really early. Like 531 from Jim Wendler worked incredibly well for me. And then I see heaps of different variations of the 531 program out there. But those two I've got like really good results on.
Yeah, I mean, I've done a shitload of programs as well for strength. Probably the one I ran the longest was Smolov, which is like the most...
It didn't work for me.
No, Smolov was... But Smolov has a lot of volume in it. And I did Smolov for my legs, but I ended up just getting a lot of injuries. I think I never quite figured out what the best strength training program was for me. In terms of getting results, though... a lower rep program. So I'm the opposite to you. So a lower rep program, but with a lot of volume. So similar to, oh God, I forgot his name. He does the A12 program, the Amazing 12. Paul McElroy. He was on the podcast. He's a, you know, world champion powerlifting coach. And he, I think he set some world records himself. But he had this approach where you basically take a heavy weight that you could do for like 7 and you do it for like 2 reps or 3 reps. So super sub maximal, but still a heavy percentage. And you do like 10 sets. And I did some variations of that, like towards the tail end of CrossFit. I actually finished up our last competitive season. And I said, you know, I'm just going to focus on getting strong. And we really started just doing a lot of that, like high percentage, but like 2 reps. But we do like 20 sets. And I got the best progress on that. I don't know what it was, but my body responded so well to that. I pulled like a 240-kilo deadlift in a restaurant. Don't ask me how I got to the restaurant. But we had like a deadlift contest at the restaurant. I pulled 240 kilos and it was like pretty smooth and pretty easy. It was probably only like 8.5 RPE. It wasn't even my max. And that was just midway through one of the cycles. It wasn't even supposed to be a testing week. And sometimes that happens. Sometimes like midway through a cycle, you're just like super strong. It doesn't always work out when you're supposed to test. But when I was doing that, I got super strong. The thing is with me though, anytime it starts to get really heavy, I get injured really quickly. So like I can, that's probably the program I made the most progress on most quickly, that style of training. But regardless of whatever program I'm on, as soon as that barbell gets heavy for me, like I just get injured. Yeah. Mm.
So yeah, we are the opposites. I like the lower volume with some reps in there.
High volume.
No, I like a lower volume program in total. But it just has sets that have higher reps.
Oh, so like, high rep sets.
Yeah, so lots of like fives, eights, tens, and probably not much higher than that. But like that sort of rep range, you can go pretty heavy on that. Because Wendler would have like, you know, one set where you might get 7-8 reps.
Right.
And Amir's programs would have a lot of eights and tens in them. Just seem to work really well. But the whole program is pretty low volume.
Right. I just do twos and threes. They work well for me.
Okay. Team Rhodes. Will you create a program for the international folks that they can do at home with dumbbells and bands? But he like can't go to the gym. He's in Canada.
Oh, okay. So maybe they've got different restrictions over there. We do have a program. We have Project Dumbbell.
Yeah.
It's an 8-week program, which is all dumbbell training. You do it with one set of dumbbells. That's on our website, mymuscleproject.com. Just scroll to the bottom and go to programs or go to shop. You can find the programs there. Yeah, and that's in the app as well. We made that one while we were in lockdown, just kind of for ourselves, really. Working on it with some of the coaches and some of the clients at the gym and testing it. And we just turned it into an 8-week program. We put it in the app. But this one's just, I think it's a bit cheaper. It's not a complete program. So I think the whole thing's only like maybe $30, $40. So.
Yeah, and people in lockdown are still buying it because you see like where they buy it from is always somewhere in lockdown.
Yeah, yeah. So definitely go check that one out there. That's where it is, Project Dumbbell.
Nick Rowland, he works a physical job 5 days a week and he does strength/hypertrophy work, so muscle building work, 6 days a week. Any advice on recovery since I'm active on rest days?
Mm.
So even on rest days, I'm still very active.
Yeah, I mean, you've pretty much tapped out all the physical components, like the training side of things. So I wouldn't add or take away anything from the training.
Don't add in a walk.
Yeah, yeah. All I would then focus on for you now is you've got the other two big components of recovery, which you can look at sleep and nutrition. So that's, those are the pillars you're looking at right now. I'd prioritize sleep first. I'd try and get, you know, obviously getting something like a Whoop is super useful because you can kind of see how well these recovery metrics or all these recovery tools that you're using and methods, how well they're actually paying off to your sleep. But getting your sleep really solid, good sleep hygiene is super important. We do have a sleep guide on the website. You can see that as well. I think it's mymuscleproject.com/guides where you can find that. But outside of the sleep guide, then your next thing is nutrition, right?
Food. If you're under eating here.
Yeah. If you're moving around that much, mate, you need like, you need bars and shakes and snacks and fruit just because you're burning so many calories. Now, there's some level of adaptation that comes with your job, but you're more active than someone that sits at their desk. So for you, recovery, you need to be smashing calories.
More active and less opportunities to eat.
Yeah.
So often these people are like, yeah, you get a laboring job and you under eat like crazy.
I carry around now like some just like muesli bars and oat bars and stuff because I do a little bit of extra training now. Just in between sessions, I'm like, hey, I'm going to go hit like a really hard workout soon. And like I've had a meal and I've had some water and stuff, but I'm just going to get like an extra 200-300 calories in and like mostly carbohydrates, and it just always helps.
You know, there's something I got when I first got a nutrition coach was he like looked at my diet and he's like, man, what you're eating is like, okay, it's fine, but just when you're eating it is a problem here.
Right.
When I started like just having more food available throughout the day, like always carrying food with me to make sure I wasn't like going long periods without food, I had way less days where I underate, and I think my recovery improved a ton.
Yeah.
You should be eating. You know?
Yeah.
If you're training and stuff, you should be eating during the day. Okay, Jace MCV, is the last name. The question is it better to have a consistent bedtime and wake up for sleep, even though it's short, or longer sleeps with random times going to bed? I think we've answered this before, but I will just tell you my own data that I get from my Whoop band, which is it's way better to be consistent.
Mm.
And I see this generally in clients as well. When I look at them and I'm like, oh, like, I wonder why your recovery is so bad. Look at the sleep. The average time is okay, but the timing is all over the shop because Whoop's got this one where it shows you the bars of like when you went to bed and when you woke up. And you want those bars to like basically look the same every single day. When they're all over the shop, and usually the recovery is just shitty on the back of that.
Yeah. Yeah, the reason that what Raf's saying is correct there is because sleep research shows, you know, so the circadian rhythm is basically a big part of that is when your body releases melatonin, right? And it's trying to get itself to consistently release the right amount of melatonin at the right time so that you can hit the different stages of sleep. So non-REM, REM sleep, non-REM. Non-REM would be your light sleep and your deep sleep. But they happen in a very fixed sequential order. And that order needs to stay the same. It needs to be consistent for your body to fully recover. Now, if you're constantly dipping in and out of sleep or going to bed and waking up at different stages of that sleep, your body doesn't know when to correctly release melatonin, which is going to be very disruptive for your recovery, very disruptive for your hormones. And so having a consistent time, even though it's a little bit less, is much better. Then you can work more sleep into your routine later. But having the consistent bedtime, having the consistent wake-up time is very important. Now, at the same time, with that advice, I would say, you know, you got to be a little bit careful with it. I can't imagine you're sleeping like 3 or 4 hours, but...
I said 6 or 7.
Okay. No, I would much rather keep the consistent sleep cycle. It's not enough sleep, definitely not. Don't think that you're out of the woods here, but you do need an extra hour sleep in there. I need to be getting over 7 hours. But yeah, for now, having the consistent sleep and wake times is more important. I will say as well, if you think about it, in the most extreme example is shift workers, right? Shift workers have the worst sleep out of everyone, but each time they go and sleep, they're doing an 8 hour sleep.
Yeah, they usually get often longer sleeps than the average person because they don't, you know, usually they're sleeping at the end of a long shift that often don't have to be up for the next shift.
Yeah. But, you know, if the science said, oh, it's 8 hours no matter what time of day it is, they would be fine.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have, what category are they in? They're a type 2 cancer risk or whatever it is. Stage 2, stage 3. Can't remember what the terminology is. But basically, there's different categories of carcinogens, things that will give you cancer. And they're like up there with like iodine poisoning. No, what is it? Some kind of poisoning.
Something not good.
Yeah, something not good. That was a fucking science fail and a half. You suck, bro. You don't know anything. Go ahead.
All right, last question. And this is one on the project programs. Is it possible to get the project programs done with a warm-up in an hour? Yes, it is 100% possible. Just stay off your phone and stop talking to other people in the gym.
Nah, not Project Body though. I have actually had a lot of feedback. It's taking people a bit long. I'm going to adjust the session length in there to give you an option. I'm going to say 3 to 5 sets instead of 5 sets on some of the stuff. The volume is up there because I really want people getting jacked, but I do realize people need to fit it in an hour. So I will be reducing some of the session.
Probably lengths. Also, to be honest, it does depend. Like if you get stronger, sessions take longer.
Yeah.
When you're lifting really heavy, there's more warm-up sets involved. Generally, you need a bit of a longer rest if you're deadlifting 300 as opposed to 100.
Yeah.
There's probably like more belts to put on, more chalk to get ready, and maybe louder music to listen to beforehand.
Yeah.
So, you get more advanced. Usually, you've got to put a bit more time towards the gym.
And yeah, the older you get, the more injuries you accumulate, you need a longer warm-up as well.
Okay, guys, we have a really good Netflix
documentary. Before we jump into it, he's not wrong. We do have one. But before that, you guys have got to get mad supplements in. Before you go and watch Netflix, the best supplement to get in is zinc magnesium. I talk about it all the time. I'm actually been giving this one out more than the whey protein to our clients. And that is because most people's diets are low in zinc. Not dramatically, but most people do have low zinc levels. I would imagine if you test your zinc levels, they'll probably be slightly under. And zinc is a rate limiter in metabolism. So if you don't have adequate zinc levels, your metabolism is not running at its optimal level. So if you increase the amount of zinc, you can increase the amount of calories that you burn at rest, which is great because if you can burn an extra 2, 3, some studies 900 calories for people with almost no zinc, you can eat more food and not gain weight, which is what we all want. We want to enjoy more food. So ensuring that you have that every day is great. And then obviously magnesium is just great for calming the nervous system, helping you enter deeper stages of sleep for longer. So that is their amazing supplement, ZMA by True Protein. That's my recommendation. Mind Muscle 10. So Mind Muscle 10, all one word, no spaces. That is going to get you 10% off, sorry, your entire order. TrueProtein.com.au.
Don't get cheap subs. It's going to end badly. Anyone that has tried to lift through the ages of 15 to 19 know that cheap supplements do not go well for you.
Do not go well.
Okay, so this week we have the challenge. I think we mentioned it last week. It is four-point...
The challenge or the challenger?
I think it's the challenger.
Okay.
Yeah, the challenger, it was a... it was in 1986. So, it was 1986. I was not born. And it was one of the flights they were doing. NASA was putting on... They were putting on a lot of flights at the time. And this one was a complete disaster, to put it lightly. Everybody knows what happened. It was like super famous at the time. I think even if you're younger, you may be confused. There was another one in 2003, another like NASA flight disaster. This is one is on the 1986 one. The one in
the one later.
No, yeah, this was the first one.
Oh, the first one, yeah.
Most people always get confused because there was another one in 2003 where astronauts died, where the spaceship was coming on re-entry.
Oh,
And it burnt up on re-entry, which everyone probably remembers.
I remember that one.
Yeah, whereas this one was the earlier one, but... I think even more famous was this first one. And this is a really good four-part documentary. It starts like with the beginning, which is like, hey, this is a disaster of a spaceship. And then it goes straight back to the, what happened all before that. And the four-part series basically leads you up to the disaster again.
No spoilers, they die. But no, I got through the first episode. I am definitely keen to watch the rest of it. The NBA Finals has been taking up some of my spare time. I got through Vikings. So, finally got through it. You know when a show just has you and like you just can't watch anything else? Like you're not free from its grip. You have to know what happens in the next episode. And there's too many bloody episodes. So, anyway, that was what happened with me and Vikings. So, I'm finally free of Vikings. So, I can get back onto watching some other stuff. And yeah, I watched Challenger. I watched that one on coaches as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, we need to review that one as well.
We're going to be reviewing that. Of course, there's tons of coaches that are listening to this podcast right now. But yeah, that Challenger, that first episode was awesome. It's just done so well. Netflix just makes some incredible documentaries. Some of the footage that they've gotten, some of the actors and the voiceovers and stuff that they've been putting together, it's just amazing. They tell the story so well. And I think as well, what it does is really helps create the reason that the NASA program was going at the rate it was going, the reason it was going. You know, it had so much political tension at the time, so much racial tension at the time. It really was something that everyone in America could get behind and have hope. So yeah, I think it was really cool how they set that background story up as well. It's done really well.
It's amazing. I mean, I will warn you that it is also can be pretty hard to watch because it's like leading up to this disaster and you're going through like all the lives and the personal lives and the families and stuff like that. So it's like any sort of, I guess, really sad story.
Yeah.
Like it's you know, it doesn't leave you like a huge smile on your face. But what's amazing about this one as well is that they speak to, you know, they've got interviews with the people that decided to launch, you know, and interviews with people that were like, hey, we shouldn't launch. So like that is, you know, a pretty unbelievable perspective. You know, having the, I guess, maybe the bad guy, it was not really a bad guy, but you know, the person that obviously in hindsight made the wrong call and how they're dealing with that. And they don't really put judgment either way. They just like present to you, everybody, and they really leave it to you to decide. So man, I think, you know, Outside of Fitness is like one of the best documentaries I've seen on Netflix.
Big call. But the only thing that could make it a big call is, what do you give it out of five, bro?
Probably say a 4.5
out of 5. Oh my God, it's a monster. It's an absolute monster. There you go, folks. I'm going to give it a 4 so far. I haven't finished the whole thing, but I've thoroughly enjoyed the first episode.
Do you know Richard Feynman?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're like a Richard Feynman fan, I know he's like very famous.
Yeah.
He has this like unbelievable cameo in the documentary.
Oh, yeah.
Which, because it was a long time ago, most people probably don't remember this. But he has like a really good moment. I think it's in the last episode. Okay. So you get all the way through this.
Yeah, right. There you go. Awesome. Guys, there you have it. We talked about a few things today. But remember, we have a new project program coming out. That is Project Fitness. So that is a full conditioning-based program. That'll be out at the end of October. So you probably listen, some of you might be listening to this. It's already October, so it's coming soon. We're going to start the four-part series of basically Project Fitness, which is going to be every Thursday. You're going to get, you know, we did the muscle building, we did the strength one. Now we're going to be all this stuff about fitness. So that's going to be like most, you know, most common mistakes people make when they're trying to get fit. Some of the most unconventional training tools for increasing your fitness outside of just training itself. So some really cool stuff in there that we're excited to present to you guys and talk about. And yeah, there's some pretty cool episodes as well. We have been upgrading the level of video content. We're now on YouTube, so you can watch all the episodes on YouTube, definitely all the interviews. We've sliced some of the important stuff up there, so you can watch that as well. And then yeah, guys, you can always support us by leaving us a cute little rating and a nice couple of words. That always goes a long way to us to communicate with you as listeners. But as always, guys, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.